Welcome to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Edgar Lujano, filling in for Cy Kellett today. Second hour, we have Jimmy Akin for an Ask Me Anything. So if you want a question that's off topic, you can go ahead and wait for the next hour with Jimmy. But today, on this hour, we have a special guest in studio, which is a rare thing, but it's a great thing that we have today. So today in studio, we have Dr. Stacy Trusenko. She is... She teaches courses of faith and science at Seton Hall University, the author of Particles of Faith, and she runs a new Substack called Engaging Atheism. Dr. Stacy Trusenko, welcome.
Hello, Edgar. It's so good to be here today.
It's good to have you here. So congratulations on the new Substack, by the way.
Thank you.
It's fascinating, and I was complimenting you before on the art that you have on there, because who doesn't like comic strips when it comes to art, right?
Of yourself.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, fascinating topics that you cover on your Substack on elements.
Thank you.
And obviously, you're very much involved in the scientific world, in the theological world, and now getting involved in the philosophical world. And like I had mentioned this to you earlier, it's fascinating that whenever we have conversations about faith and science, we always talk about faith, and we always talk about the topic of science, but we never actually get into the science. And that's because we usually talk about philosophy of science.
Yeah.
So it's engaging, fascinating when it comes to those topics. But before we get into elements, because I want to ask you about that, if you have a question about faith and science, you can go ahead and give us a call at 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Again, faith and science, any question you have about that. And we're going to get into a little bit of Thomism. So this is going to be interesting. So if you have questions about Thomism and science, we prefer those questions today.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your most recent, studies and what you're getting into.
Well, I'm getting into philosophy because I decided that I hate philosophy. I love atoms. That's what I loved before I became Catholic. I was a chemist. In my conversion story, I talk about how chemistry pointed me to Christ, the order in the world. I had no explanation for that. And then I became Catholic, and then I wanted to know more about our faith, and I studied theology. And then I realized I can't bridge the two. It's like two different worlds, two different languages. And that's very scary when you're a scientist and you're having trouble reconciling that with theology. And so I finally pursued a master's degree in systematic philosophy. And I am so frustrated with it because it's so close to bringing it all together, and I want to cross that bridge. And so I'm about to finish that master's, and I've been accepted into a doctoral program in philosophy. So I'm just collecting degrees until I have enough answers before I die.
I mean, there's worse things you can collect, right?
Yeah.
Degrees are a good thing. So I was reading a couple of things on your blog. So you're starting to get into elements. And before we even get into that, because we are talking philosophy, let's start defining our terms, because that's what philosophers do, right? So what do we mean by elements?
What we mean today are elements on the periodic table. An individual unit is an atom. But what Aquinas meant, and he took this from Aristotle, was the four elements: earth, water, air, and fire. And what he meant metaphysically, that those were, they're the most fundamental matter-form composite. They're so fundamental that there's no parts. It's prime matter all the way down to prime matter, which is formless matter. It's prime matter with a form. And so that combination of prime matter and form are the elements, and they make up everything else. So there has to be an element. If hylomorphism is true, if that's the right view of nature, and if everything is matter and form composite and it's got parts, there has to be that first unit, which is why scientists always looked for elements. They wanted that most fundamental unit. Well, now we know that atoms are made up of parts. So what do you do with that? And I just wasn't willing to let go of elements as Aristotle and Aquinas defined them, because they're so critical to the hylomorphic system. They're so critical to the Aristotelian Thomistic view of nature. And if you throw that out, well, you throw out all the ways that Aquinas used that natural philosophy in explaining the incarnation and the Holy Trinity and who we are as human persons and the immortality of the soul and creation. And so this is really making me excited that it actually works, okay? And I feel competent here because I know chemistry. I know about the elements, and it actually works. Hylomorphism, which brings back in form and final cause and all these things. God back into science.
So for laymen, philosophy wasn't my strong suit either. So what do you, a hylomorphism, can you, what,
yes.
What does that mean?
Okay, I'm just trying to be fancy like a philosopher here. Hylomorphism is this idea that things are made of matter and form.
Okay.
And if you're just a chemist, things are just made of matter. Right?
Okay.
Like, you're made of matter. You're a composite, a highly complex composite system of atoms and molecules. And that's what everything is. But form is that which actualizes the matter, which gives the form to something, makes it what it is.
Just like the idea of what this thing is?
It's like the structure, but it's more than structure. It's what gives it all of its essential properties, what makes a human a human. So if you think of the most essential things of being a human, that's the form of a human. And for the atoms, for the elements on the periodic table, those are understood in terms of form. Form is so important in modern chemistry and modern physics that it's the reason why we have quantum mechanics today. Scientists weren't comfortable with quantum mechanics, about all those funny things that the electrons do at the quantum mechanical level. But the atoms kept saying, yes, we are. Here's what we do. They're like, whoa, there's a form there. But when you talk about form, you have to talk about God. So if we're just going to talk about matter, that's what science does. If we're going to talk about form and matter, which is hylomorphism, you have to talk about God. Like the, it's like if you're going to carve a statue, you have to have the form of the statue in your mind. So that is an artificial thing. But in nature, it's God's mind that God is the form giver.
Yeah. So is in the scientific world, you mentioned that they see that there's form, but is there an acknowledgement and acceptance of this idea of form within the scientific community?
There is when you lay awake at night and you're like, where does the form come from? And there's actually in the historical writings, the letters between Niels Bohr and the other scientists that were trying to figure out, like Werner Heisenberg, they were struggling with this concept. Because if you take a little planet, a little solar system, which is kind of how they were viewing atoms, and you smash them together, they're forever changed. If you smash things in the classical Newtonian world together, they change. But with atoms, that's what they do. They smash together all day long, and they stay what they are. And so they're like, there's a form there that won't go away.
Interesting.
And so they just accept that, and they don't really. I think a lot of scientists are like this. They're just like, "No, God, I'm not looking up. Just let me do my science."
Okay. Well, excellent. That's a great primer for the conversation that we're going to get into. So, once again, if you have a question for Dr. Stacey Trusankos, go ahead and give us a call. Anything on faith and science, we would love to take your question. Plenty of lines open. You can call us at 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884 and we'll go to our first break. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation.
Thank you.
Be right back.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilino with a few words about St. Irenaeus. It's only recently that Pope Francis has declared him to be a doctor of the Church, and this is unusual because he's been dead for many centuries, almost two millennia. But I think he's a man for our time because he's teaching us to think, to have an educated faith, to know the reasons for what we believe, and then present those to a skeptical world.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Edgar Lujano. Here with Dr. Stacey Tresenkos talking faith and science. Well, if you want to go ahead and talk to Dr. Stacey Tresenkos, you can call us at 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Now, we were talking about form and matter.
Yes.
And this idea within the philosophical realm and also within the scientific realm. Mm-hmm. You have these ideas in their own, I guess, terminologies or their own definitions. So when we're bringing in Thomas Aquinas, how do you mold Thomas Aquinas to today's modern world, and what does that even mean?
Well, it's actually extremely doable, which is why I'm so excited. But you have to talk about what's essential to the Thomistic worldview, the natural philosophy. So we're not talking about things like what's in the actual physics textbook or chemistry textbook about the properties of the elements or, the molecular orbital theory or Dalton's atomic theory. We're not talking about the physical the details. We're talking about the metaphysical view of act and potency, that there's prime matter and potency that can be actualized. That worldview completely fits with what I know as a chemist, which is exciting to me because it's not only going to force people, I don't mean to say force, but it brings God back into science. Like for those who are interested in looking, it shows you how divine action might be working. It tells us something. We'll never know that completely. But what it also does for chemistry is it helps guide further research. It helps you know if you're on the right track, if you're asking the right questions. And I think that would be an invaluable tool for scientists. I don't think I'll get to teach all the scientists natural philosophy in my life, but maybe somebody after me will.
Do you find in the scientific community people that meld those two worlds together, or is it kind of empty in that sphere?
It's empty, and I get it. It is so hard coming from the side of chemistry into philosophy. It is so hard. It's like you have to shed everything you thought you knew and relearn it, and then figure out where the compatibilities are. But I'm a convert. I already did that once, right? I already forgot about everything I knew and started over. Like, okay, I'm looking for truth. But I think a lot of people don't do it. I mean, when you read chemistry textbooks now, they dismiss Aristotle. Oh, these were ancient views. They no longer apply today. They just kick it out, kick him to the wayside. Yeah. They don't even mention Thomas Aquinas. And I think that's sad because that's not really, I think they do it because it's such two different languages. And so I hope God willing, if that's the work I do for the rest of my life, it's trying to build that bridge and show people, this is what element means in both, but here's how they mean the same thing. This is what substance means in both, but here's how they mean the same thing. I'm a mother of seven. I know how to get one person to listen to the other person.
That's one of the gifts of being a mother, isn't it? Well, excellent. Well, there are a few callers on the line. If you want to go ahead and take some questions?
Sure.
All right, excellent. Then we'll go ahead and start off with Nicholas in Missouri, listening on YouTube. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Hi,
Nicholas. Go right ahead.
All right. So first off, I really enjoy the topic. Hylomorphism is something I've been ascribed to for a few years at this point. But my question is actually a really old question for me, about 13 years old at this point. And it's about the thought experiment used for theory of special relativity. The thought experiment is about twins and one moving away at light speed and coming back and how he's older than the other one. The way I had a problem with it, and no one's been able to give me an adequate explanation, was that only works if it's a point acceleration, while most accelerations in the world are uniform accelerations like gravity or electrical fields, and they wouldn't be detectable by the twin that's moving away. So my problem is, I feel like that Thurm experiment, which is the basis of special relativity, is kind of undermining the whole special relativity idea, which then means the space-time continuum doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So that's something I've always had an issue with. And for me, it always felt like that thought experiment kind of undermined a lot of Christian philosophy in the past.
Regarding time.
Time and space being combined.
And so what is your question? You just want to comment on that, or?
is that how do you approach a widely held thought experiment as being factually true, even though there are objections to it, and the objections are like, the theory works, so the thought experiment must be true?
Yeah, okay, that's a great question. I mean, I'm actually doing a thing on scientific wokeism tomorrow, which is kind of tied into what you're asking. With special relativity, like, there was the Michelson-Morley experiments where they were reflecting light off of mountains and measuring the time that it took to travel. So it's not completely a thought experiment. Special relativity is something that has been experimentally verified. But what do you do when there are thought experiments that seem like they contradict how we think of time? And by the way, I didn't know this, but there are large philosophical disputes over how to think of time, just time. So, I mean, you're right to jump into this and say, how do we know what's what? And here's my big answer for anything like this, not just special relativity, but anything like this. We are humans, and we are so ignorant of the full truth. I mean, Edgar does not even know where all the electrons are exactly on the tip of his nose right now. He's got no prayer of ever knowing that answer. But scientists are going to probe into the natural world anyway. They're going to do experiments. They're forced to make conclusions. They have to lay claim to something and make a conclusion. It takes courage. And then you have scientists who are imposing their ideology on top of their data. They actually already know the conclusion. They're just trying to pretend like they've got data to prove it, and they're not actually seeking the truth. You have to kind of sort through the jungle of scientific data that's out there and claims, and be patient and realize that the truth, like grass growing up through the sidewalk, will impose itself at some point. Scientists did not want to accept quantum mechanics, and they had to, because there's something true there. So it will eventually come along, maybe not in your lifetime, which is disappointing. But you also are right to be critical and skeptical in a healthy way of what scientists say. Catholics do it the same as non-Catholics. We should never put too much faith in a scientist, because the best scientist out there, as genius and brilliant as he or she is still just a human like us. And their guardian angels know way more than they do. So you're right to be skeptical about it. I hope that's a good answer to your question, because I just took like the big view.
Yeah. How's that, Nicholas?
It worked great. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Nicholas.
Thank you for your call.
Good for you.
All right. And we'll go ahead and why not jump to one more call before I ask you a few more questions that I'm curious about. We have Michael in Maryland listening on Guadalupe Radio. Michael, go right ahead and into your question.
Hi. This question I hesitate to ask because it's troublesome to me in particular. Been studying the life of Alexis Carrel, Nobel Prize winning French Catholic doctor, and part of his life included his scientific study into the field of genetics, and more specifically the use of that, the philosophy behind it, which is eugenics. And so I'm wondering, is there a brick wall between Catholic theology, philosophy related to eugenics and the science of eugenics, or perhaps you just have no comment at all, which I completely would understand.
Well, I'm with you. I don't understand how you can be Catholic on one hand and then just set that aside and do something else in your scientific work on the other hand. The way I heard a priest tell a CCD class one time to kids who were preparing for First Communion, if you don't believe, you can't receive. You're going to be talking out of both sides of your mouth. So it seems like the scientist who does that is talking out of both sides of his mouth, but in very destructive ways that aren't funny at all. I don't know how you reconcile that except pray for him. I was reading about... how such ideologies overlaid onto science. I've really been thinking about that lately. It is very destructive. Yeah. It's so destructive. Yeah. And we do have to be on guard for that that kind of wokeism.
Yeah. How's that, Michael?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. So plenty of lines open. If you want to go ahead and give us a call, you can talk to Dr. Stacey Trisankos on faith and science. So anything in regards to that, you can go ahead and give us a call at 888 888- 318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Before we continue to, on more calls, Stacy, I was reflecting on one specific word that tends to have two different meanings when you're talking in the theological, philosophical, and the scientific world, is the term substance. Mm-hmm. And in one of my philosophy classes, I remember my professor says, give me your favorite philosophical term. And he was going around the classroom. It was an intro to philosophy class, and people were like, I don't know. It's, yes, knowledge. I understand. That's a good word. And it came to me, and the only word that I actually remembered was substance, because I remembered the Eucharist, and we talked about the substance of the Eucharist. But you also hear the term substance frequently within the scientific world. So what's the difference there? Because I'm sure we can go on for a long period of time, but I want to hear from you. What's the difference between this term in these two different worlds?
Yeah, you could write a book on that word, and it would be a challenge indeed to make it interesting, a page turner maybe. But in chemistry, we teach it this way. When you have reactants over here, so you have your initial chemicals that are going to react, and a chemical reaction occurs, and then you have your product. So what happens is bonds are broken and new bonds are formed. It's like taking apart your Lego things and using the same Lego blocks and reconstructing something new. That is a new substance. So the definition of a new substance is a chemical change has to occur. Bonds break, new bonds form, and a new chemical species now exists. So if you have water and you convert it to if you have H2O2, hydrogen peroxide, and then you convert it to water, you have a new substance. So a new substance is a new chemical formula. And I've been teaching that all my life, that I've been a teacher of chemistry. And I was horrified when I realized that's not even close to what it means in philosophy. In philosophy, and some philosophers disagree, and not everybody agrees. This is how I understand Aristotelian Thomistic philosophy. A substance, most properly, is a living thing, is the substance. Because you can't say that your arm is a substance, because then you wouldn't be one substance. You would be a whole bunch of substances. Mm. So your arm doesn't have a substantial form. It's an accidental form that's part of the substance that is you. So the highest thing, the highest body in nature, are living things. And those are most properly called substances. Does that answer your question? I can keep talking.
Yeah, no, please do. Is there a way to marry the two? How do we do that?
Absolutely. There's a way to marry the two. So we're using the term substance in different ways, of course. So maybe we need to find a better term. But the idea of it is, and this is what's so brilliant about Aquinas with the elements. So then what do you do with an element, the most fundamental body that is just prime matter and form? You're made up of elements, right? Whether it's the four elements in antiquity or the modern elements, this idea that you're made up of elements. What Aquinas says is that the elements lose their substantial form when they become part of you. And so but they keep their active powers. So the solution there, his solution, which is brilliant, is that you're not made up of a whole bunch of atoms and molecules. You are you, and you have these parts all the way down to your elements that are part of you. And the element loses its substantial form when it becomes part of you, but then it's retrievable and it can regain its substantial form when it's not part of you. It's kind of like marriage. And that's why I was like, I know this idea.
I'm new to it. I'm coming up on years, so please continue.
Well, listen carefully.
All right.
Okay, because the two become one thing. There's a lot to learn from the molecules. When two atoms come together and they bond, in chemistry we teach it this way, they are changed. Okay, we still call hydrogen and oxygen, we still call it two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen. It makes one water molecule. But we know as chemists, and we teach this even in high school, the hydrogen is changed by being bonded with the oxygen. It's got an electron, a valence electron. Well, it's being shared with the oxygen now. So it changes the chemical properties of the hydrogen. The oxygen now is sharing its electron, so it changes its chemical properties. So as the two become one, they make something new. And they both lose their identity, kind of, because they're now identified as part of this greater thing they're a part of. Okay. And so it's like marriage. You're still you, and she's still her. But together, if you were just like, I'm me, you do you.
Yeah.
You know, if you lost yourself to the union, then that wouldn't be a molecule either. But you retain your identity, your power as yourself. But together, you're something new that wasn't there before. That's a beautiful thought.
Yeah.
And that's chemistry. That's how my chemistry students give names to the elements all the time, because they're like little people in their minds when they learn it the right way. I mean, we know they don't have free will, but...
You know, somebody explained that to me in those terms, I probably would have understood science a little better.
I know. I just, it breaks my heart that people hate chemistry.
Well,
so wrong.
Well, with that, once again, if you want to talk to Dr. Stacy Tresenko, you can go ahead and give us a call, because if not, then I get to ask her all the questions that I have. So give us a call at 888-318-7884. Again, anything on faith and science. You have 30 more minutes if you want to give us a call. That's 888-31-TRUTH, 888-318-7884.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear, as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking faith and science with Dr. Stacy Tresenko. So if you have a question, plenty of lines open. You can go ahead and give us a call at 888-318-7884. And it's great because we actually have her here in the studio. And it's always great to have people in the studio. So one of the reasons to come visit is you have a talk coming up tomorrow, correct?
Yes, and yes.
At a conference, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I would be glad to. It's a conference tomorrow at Our Lady of, Mount Carmel. Yeah, Our Lady of Mount Carmel Catholic Church here in San Diego. And the title of the conference is Withstanding Wokeism, A Catholic Response. The speakers that are going to be there are Noelle Mehring. I'm really excited to meet her in person and speak alongside her, Paul Jonah, and Father Anthony Soraki. So we're all kind of taking a different part, the legal, and Noelle's going to talk about what is wokeism in general, because she has that book. And it's gonna be great. It's a whole day long. We're each giving our talk. I'm doing the science part, woke science, and then we're doing a forum. Ask more questions.
Oh, excellent. Okay, yeah. Well, if you don't get your question in today, you can always go to the conference tomorrow at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Is that it?
Yeah, Our Lady
of Mount Carmel. Yeah. Tomorrow here in San Diego. So if you're local to Southern California, make sure you're not missing that, because it's going to be a great topic, a great conversation, a great conference. All right, so shall we go back to the calls?
Yes.
All right, we go to Caleb in Illinois, listening on 92.5. Caleb, well, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question, I apologize if it's a bit broad strokes, but essentially is this. how do you use your profession, your scientific profession, to bolster your faith? And the philosophical impulses in modern life, both of which are secular. Mm-hmm. One is to say science is the only objective truth, matter is all that exists. But the second is that everyone's truth is individual to them. My truth can be whatever I want, your truth can be whatever you want. So within that, I'm curious for your thoughts on how you've used your profession to bolster your faith within that sort of weird, competing philosophical framework.
Well, I mean, I give entire talks on this, and I started out Particles of Faith, my book, talking about it. I felt like before I became Catholic, before I accepted the gift of faith, I just walked around with I did this before. That's how I felt. I just kind of didn't want to look up. I didn't want to think about the bigger questions. I just wanted to do science. I mean, we know so much about science today that you can really spend a lifetime studying and researching science and not think beyond it. Just like we use our cell phones and we don't really know how they work. You can get by like that. But it bothered me because I knew, like, my research in graduate school was to simulate artificial photosynthesis. I couldn't do a minimal, little, tiny 2-electron jumps of this big system. And I looked at a tree one day, and I'm like, that tree is out there doing something I can never do. Like, who is this great chemist? And it brought me, it really humbled me. And when I finally did convert and become Catholic and accept the gift of faith and grant intellectual assent to the truths of faith, because you do have to accept those and you don't always understand what they mean. You got to live by them, and then you start to understand, and you mature in your faith all your life. You're converting all your life. But it made sense of the order in the world. I fell in love with chemistry even more, and that angst was gone. Like, where does all this come from? I felt like I looked up, and I had that feeling like the first time you ride an airplane and you see your house from the airplane up in the air. I'm like, all your life you're just in this house living here and you know all the things there. But when you go up with that gift of faith and you look at the bigger picture, the bigger landscape, you see your house and you know your house, but you also know how it fits into everything else. And that is extremely satisfying to be able to put it all together. I mean, that tied into, you know, I could love my children, but I could also be amazed at how their little bodies work.
How's that, Caleb?
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb.
Thank you for your call. So you mentioned the tree, looking out at the tree and saying, what amazing chemist created this thing. That's a fascinating way of thinking about it. And when we look at things like that and we see not just our generation is looking at the same exact tree, but people from 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years in the past have also looked at trees like this and probably wondered similar things.
Yeah.
But in our modern society, we see that there, with all of our scientific advancements through science, physics, chemistry, biology, how do we compare that to the notions? Sometimes we look at Aristotle and people from the past and say, weren't they wrong about these things? Mm-hmm. And how do we square that, especially since we're looking at it from a science and faith perspective and philosophical perspective?
Yeah. Well, you know, the part of the divide between faith and science came around because modern philosophers in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, and so on, they started thinking, well, science is giving us all these answers. And philosophy and theology, they're just saying the same old thing. There's nothing new to discover there. They kind of like lost their intrigue with those because science was so wonderful. And we're still living in the scientific revolution. I mean, think about how much your mobile phones have changed in the last 5 years. It's still exploding all around us. And so a lot of people think that's where all the answers are. And it's just not. I mean, you need the other. And part of the work today for apologists is to help this scientifically minded culture we have understand that there are bigger questions. Like, you can't just think in terms of atoms and molecules. You do need to ask the bigger questions about where things come from and why we're here and what we're doing, what we're supposed to be doing in our lives, you know, not just staying healthy and going to the gym and buying stuff. We're supposed to be getting to heaven.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So once again, if you want to talk to Dr. Stacy Trusankos, there is one line open. You can go ahead and give us a call at 888 888- 318-784. And with that, we move over to Jeff in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, listening on St. Michael Radio. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate this topic. I have about a million questions, but
we're going to have to stick to one, Jeff.
Just generally, how can I make sense, or how is there evidence that the soul is rational or the soul has an intellect when, as we learn more and more about the brain, it's the brain that, you know, reasons and has memories and all that. So what does it mean to talk about the soul, being rational?
Well, pretend like you've never heard that in your life, because that's how most people who aren't Catholic are. They don't really know what the soul is. It's some poetic thing. But it really comes down to this. If you don't understand what the soul is, so forget the Holy Trinity, made in the image and likeness of God, and the rational soul with the spiritual powers of intellect and free will, you don't know all of that. You have to ask yourself, am I more than particles? Because if there's nothing immaterial about you, if there's nothing beyond just the material of your body, then you're not, and it gets back to the hylomorphism, you're not more than particles. You're just an agglomeration of particles that stuck together, and when you eat a cheeseburger, you're going to be a whole different person because now you have different particles. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So if the person is willing, and I've talked to atheists about this before, you know, and none of them have looked at me in the face and said, you're right, but plenty have come back later and said, I thought about that. If you're more than particles, if you're willing to concede that, then when you learn about the Holy Trinity, how God the Father generated as a concept, conception, the Word, God the Son, as an act of the intellect. So we think thoughts and then we speak words. There's a proceeding there. And God the Father and God the Son together is one substance, consubstantial, spirating forth the Holy Spirit as an act of love or the will. And then you say you're made in the image and likeness of God, the form giver. And part of an essential attribute of being human is that you have the power of intellect and free will. And it's a spiritual power. It's more than your particles. So the questions in neuroscience that you're talking about, Jeff, are very relevant today, because it's how do those things work together? That's a very interesting and active area of research, because we absolutely are animals in the sense that we have a body and senses, internal and external senses, but we also have an intellect and free will. We can override being grumpy when we're hungry. That's my favorite one, because of our intellect, whereas my dog, not so much. But that's the proof. I mean, it's a proof to yourself. I think it's a question every one of us has to look in the mirror and answer. And for me, that was one of the things, one of the reasons that I converted, because I wanted to understand what it was like to be more fully human.
Mm. Jeff?
Well, it's just, and again, use your example, the intellect. I mean, we can explain now, or we're beginning to explain, the idea that our intellect, we can override our hunger, we can override our grumpiness, but that still takes place, as far as we understand now, in our mind. I don't need intellect soul to be able to do that or to explain that. And in research, it's more and more looking like that does happen in our brain.
Mm-hmm. And there is some part to that. There's some part of that that is true. What's his name? Walter Friedman, I think is his name. He was a neuroscientist. His father was the one that invented the frontal lobotomy, but he wasn't like that. He actually, as an atheist scientist, got intrigued with St. Aquinas's discussion of perception, how we take in perceptions and how it does enter into the neurological energy of our brain, kind of like a water molecule entering into a wave in the ocean. And the particles make up the wave, but they're also imprisoned by it. They have to operate just like the wave does. There's a lot there. If a person is not willing to grant intellectual assent to the truths of faith, that is the leap that you have to take. You can talk about the mind, but I don't think it's not satisfying to me to say that we can map out a brain state for every mental activity that we have. I wouldn't, even if I were without my faith, even back then, I don't see how we can say everything that we do mentally still is just a matter of the neurons. It seems like there's something more. But like I said, that's something that's really kind of for the person to answer.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much for your call. We're going to have to leave it right there because we have to go to our final break for the hour. So if you have a question, you can go ahead and reach us at 888-318-7884.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
What have you always wanted to know about the Vatican? Well, I'm your Vatican Insider, and I answer that question when I bring you the news about the Pope, Vatican City, and I share insights and stories from a broad spectrum of church ministries.
Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis, Saturday night, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Faith and Science with Dr. Stacy Tresenkos, and we're going to go back to the phones because the lines are completely filled. And with that, we jump to Nelson in Fort Worth, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Nelson, welcome to the show.
Yes, I have a question about the existence of the atom. Mm-hmm. And she said two things: matter. And then form, like form is a higher level above matter. However, I believe there's a third element missing. It's called self-existence or self-awareness. Now, the smallest thing that has self-awareness is a cell, right?
How do you mean?
If you try to bring something in the vicinity of a cell, let's say it's floating in water, and you bring something to it that's bad for it, instead of oxygen, you bring something near it and mm-hmm. doesn't like it, it goes away from it.
Yeah, okay.
So is it kind of like if something reacts to another thing, doesn't mean it's self-aware?
Thing.
Yeah.
But atom, now, how can you prove that an atom is not self-aware? Because if you bring an oxygen, well, let's say you bring a nitrogen atom in the vicinity of a nitrogen atom, of an oxygen atom, it'll move towards it. But if you bring a nitrogen atom in the presence of another nitrogen atom, it may repel or go away from it. So how can you prove the higher level cell is self-aware versus the atom?
Right. Thanks,
is,
Nelson.
Or is not self-aware.
Thank you for your question, Nelson.
Getting all philosophical there, Nelson. Here's how I would say it. So I would not call it self-aware, because self-awareness means something different to me, that I'm thinking about myself. And I wouldn't say that atoms or cells think in that way, but they do self-assemble and they do follow their laws of nature, and we would say in natural philosophy, according to Aristotle and Aquinas, that they follow their form. They do what they're made to do. When you learn about atoms on the periodic table, you know, we teach chemistry students, when two nitrogen atoms come close together, they do bond with each other. The electrons on one see the positive charge on the other, and they're attracted to it. That's what causes, we think, a bond. And so N2 is part of the air you're breathing right now. Two nitrogen atoms bonded together is nitrogen gas, a diatomic molecule. So But they're not thinking about it. What they're doing is what they're made to do, the form that they have, their essential attributes. They are acting the way atoms act. Nitrogen has these electrons, and it also has these protons, and sometimes they're drawn together like magnets to each other, the electromagnetic force. So those, that's the force at work there, not gravity. So I would just call those laws of nature, and I would say that those are, we could maybe say they're self-assembling. There are all kinds of macromolecules like proteins. If you add one single electron into the mix, it upsets everybody, and the protein won't fold the way it's supposed to be, and like free radicals can wreak havoc on your life for that reason. But I would just call it self-assembling, following the laws of nature as God created them.
All right, Nelson, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go ahead and leave it right there because we have a lot of other callers on the line. And from that, we from Nelson, we go over to Fabian in Texas, listening on Facebook. Fabian, go right ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you. It's so cool to be on here. So I'm going to have a, it's a real simple question. It's just, what would be some good resources to show how science and faith can coincide with one another instead of conflicting, like many people say?
Well, you can read my book, Particles of Faith. I wrote it with the audience of you, Fabian, in mind. That's exactly why I wrote it, for people who asked that question. So Particles of Faith. But also, there's a lot of people writing in this area. Not even, this is the really neat thing, not even in Catholic circles, but even in Christian circles, because this is something that we are very much aligned on with other Christians. The whole idea that God created everything and trying to understand what that means to say God created. But other people, I would definitely recommend Edward Faser. I think he's got some great books on Aristotle and how to understand faith and science there. There are scientists who have written. Brother Guy Consolmagno, has the director of the Vatican Observatory, has some great books. Dr. Stephen Barr has some great books. Christopher Baglow wrote a text. He's a theologian, but he works with scientists. Wrote a textbook on faith and science. I can't think of a whole bunch of them off the top of my head, and I hate to say my book, but that's the one I know. But I think Catholic Answers even carries some of those, so probably check their bookstore.
Yeah, check it out, shop.catholic.com. I know we tend to carry even outside publishers on occasion, so check that out, shop.catholic.com. Any follow-up, Fabian?
Oh, no, that was exact. I was just looking for a certain direction. I just got Carlo Broussard's book, Jimmy Akin's book, and I was looking for something else. I actually wrote down her book as soon as she said it, and it came out on the captions. I was like, oh, there it is, man. Yeah. I wrote
Perfect.
It down. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Fabian.
Perfect. All right, and on we go. We go to Jeremy in Atlanta, listening on the Quest radio station there in Atlanta, Georgia. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. So I, too, am a chemistry teacher, and have mostly taught chemistry in public schools. But after becoming a Catholic 2 years ago from a Protestant evangelical background, I'm actually transitioning to teaching chemistry at a Catholic school next year. So I'm excited about that. So I was responding to your comments about hating that, you know, it makes you sad that people hate chemistry and how your students, like, you know, treat them as people. So I've long tried to think about how to teach science, you know, from a Christian perspective, even in a public school. I try to do it in a kind of a more subtle way.
Yep.
But just wanted to hear your insights on how to do that kind of in a full-fledged way in the context of a Catholic school.
Oh, I have a great answer for that, because I wish I could go back in time and do what you're doing. So good for you, Jeremy. Teach him this. Science is the study of the handiwork of God, and anybody who's listened to me knows that's what I'm going to say. There are posters in chemistry classrooms that say that science is the study of the handiwork of God. I have seen this change lives, Jeremy. It was kind of like when I wrote Particles of Faith, that was my one-liner. That's what the book is about. But I've taught that to students, and what it does is a couple of things. It gives them permission to hate how hard it is to learn science, but still love science. So you are going to have, in a Catholic school, you'll have a lot of students who are not going to become scientists. And I tell them, that's okay. You don't have to memorize everything in the textbook and know it and go on and become science and love. All I want you to take from this class, if you don't love science, at least take this, that science is the study of God's handiwork. And when you do hear about the elements on the periodic table, and you do hear about how elements bond, and it's like marriage, and you do hear about things that people are discovering, let yourself have awe and wonder about it. And I lost count. I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. This is one reason I still talk about it, because I've seen it work. The students who did not like science and did not think they were good at science completely change and become scientists. I mean, I visited a young woman at Notre Dame a couple of years ago, and she was just graduating with her degree in neuroscience. So when you tell them that, and then you tell them to get a PhD in science, means that you discover something new. That's what you have to do to get a PhD. You discover something new in the world that nobody else discovered. You see something about God that nobody else ever saw before. That will make them want to go get a PhD in chemistry. And then I also teach them then, because you see it that way, you also can never check your faith at the lab door. You let your faith guide everything in your life, including your scientific decisions, because we need those kind of leaders in the future. Science is exploding. We need people who understand what it means to be human and practice virtue in science. So good for you, Jeremy. And look me up on my website. My email address is on there, and you can email me if you ever have questions.
How's that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. You know, it's interesting. I taught high school theology for 3 years, and I can't tell you how many times students came over to my classroom right after their science class and said, Mr. Luhano, we have the science teacher told us that this is how things actually happen, not what it says in the Bible. And they would trap the both of us in the hallway to try to make us confront each other. And and we would look at each other, it's like, there's no contradiction here. And it's fascinating, because I think when you're able to witness that, then there is an intrigue to look at science through the lens of faith and vice versa, and that there's really no contradiction there, because you're looking at two different things, not necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting.
It is. It is. Well, since your new Substack is Engaging Atheism, how do you go about doing that? I mean, especially if the philosophical framework isn't always the same. Like I said, whenever you speak to somebody, especially an atheist, they'll say, well, it doesn't square with science, but they never proceed to speak about science. They always begin to speak about the philosophy behind the science. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about talking with them, even if they wouldn't accept the same framework like Thomism or things like that?
Well, that is another gripe I have. I mean, I do have a list of complaints, and one of them is, okay, so a chemist learned how to read Aquinas. Hmm. If I can do that, they can learn to read scientific journals, okay? So I kind of did that so I could be able to say that legitimately. But seriously, no, it was worth it. It was hard work, but it was worth it. I teach a course at Holy Apostles College and Seminary that teaches seminarians and philosophers and theologians how to read scientific papers. I show them what a scientific paper is, the abstract, the introduction, the background, the reference list at the end, the conclusions, what the data means. And the reason I do that is because I want them to see how human scientists are, you know, how unsure they are sometimes, how tentative they are of their conclusions sometimes, how they're really not swaggering around out there saying they know it all. Most of them are pretty humble people. And I want them to also have the skill to be able to look at a scientific paper and know what's what. So you do have to learn some new terminology. You do have to learn how to think like someone else. But if we're going to evangelize in 2024, in this scientific age that is continuing to explode, it's worth learning some scientific literacy to be able to engage with people at that level. So, and otherwise, just love science. I mean, it's okay to love science. You don't have to accept every conclusion every scientist ever says, but you can love the process.
Mm-hmm. You're telling me there's actually priests and seminarians who actually study science and not just philosophy and theology?
Yeah, and it's a theology class.
Oh, is it now?
but it's called Reading Science in the Light of Faith.
Wow, okay. All right, good to know. Well, yep. Looks like our hour has come to an end. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos, thank you so much for joining. Where can people find you?
Well, I have a website, stacytrusenkos.com. If you even come close to spelling it the right way, you'll find me. But I also have that new Substack, stacytrusenkos.substack.com. Join me there. It's an interesting conversation.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it. If you want to find her, and also if you're in the Southern California area, check out that conference. Once again, the title of that conference was
Withstanding Wokeism.
All right. So, yeah, if you're in the Southern California area, go ahead and check her out. Check out the conference. It's going to be great. All right. Second hour is coming up with the one and only Jimmy Akin. So if you have any question, it's an Ask Me Anything with Jimmy for the second hour. And once again, Dr. Stacey Trusenkos, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back.